Welcome. We're going to start. We're not going to convene, but we'll get going with testimony and consideration of the. Does it have a House file number? 3449. Members, normally, obviously, this committee adheres to a very high standard of formality, clarity, and direction in our proceedings. And so today we're going to vary a little bit from that and get a little looser, if possible. And as soon as we have enough members, we'll convene. But we have a fast-track obligation now to get a bill ready and off to finance, which means that we need to finalize our work by Thursday. The plan is to work from House File 3449, which is the governor's proposal for this division. We're going to discuss bills that are before us and possible amendments. And to the extent possible, we are going to try to have staff put together a delete everything amendment based on our discussion in committee today to be presented on Thursday and then take final amendments on Thursday as well to the bill after we adopt the delete everything. So we're going to start by going through the governor's proposal. I think Helen will do that, and then we will discuss some of the other bills and amendments that are before us and try to get as far down the path of agreement as we possibly can. So I think, Helen, why don't you start? Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just the mechanics of this, are you expecting that there'll be like an unofficial engrossment or a delete all, or how mechanically moving into Thursday are we to know what's going to be considered, and are we just, if you could talk a little bit about that so the minority can know what we need to do to prepare?
Well, Representative Holbert, the plan is to have a delete everything ready to react to by tomorrow afternoon.
Okay.
So that we can have amendments. Obviously, this is moving quickly, but to have amendments ready for Thursday. And let me assure you that the minority is only slightly less informed than the majority is on this. So I'm dealing in relatively equal terms.
I don't know if you're trying to make me feel better or not, but it's not it's not working.
You'll have to deal with that on your own, Representative Holbert. So, Helen, why don't you go ahead and start with the governor's recommendation, which will be our baseline. And members, we do have a quorum, so the State Government Finance Division is in order.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm going to be working off the one-page spreadsheet that's entitled General Fund Changes Only. We are having copies made of the more detailed spreadsheet that includes the base numbers. It's the same as the spreadsheet that's posted on our House website, so it won't be anything new for the audience if you've already looked at that. And what I'm just going to do is quickly review the general fund changes in the governor's budget. Beginning on lines 4 through 7, you'll see the governor's recommended reductions to the operating budget for the legislature. That's a total of $4.1 million for 10 and 11, and then $5.9 million for 12, 13. In addition, the governor has included a recommendation for one-time cancellation from the carry-forward accounts for the House, the Senate, and the Legislative Coordinating Commission. That's $536,000. So the total recommended reduction for 10 and 11 is $4.59 million and $5.87 million going into 12-13. Moving on to the governor's office, starting on line 17, the governor's recommendation here is the $210,000 for 10 and 11. And then you'll note that he includes in his recommendations for 12-13 ratification of his unallotment action. So that shows up in the tails only. It's $162,000. And you'll see that in some of the other agency recommendations. Again, moving on to the Attorney General, the recommendation is $1.4 million for 10 and 11 and $1.9 million. And one thing I should note, what I'm talking about the legislature and the constitutional offices, is that the reductions are calculated differently than for the agency operating budget reductions, because the governor is assuming they wouldn't be subject to any kind of across-the-board cut, which you'll see at the end of the spreadsheet in the governor's recommendations.
And Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Do we have a target for this committee?
Yes.
Is it something that we might be shared with the minority, or is this we're to be in the dark about this as well?
As soon as it's shared with us, we'll share it with you. It's still in flux. It's going to be, I'll just give you some hint, it's going to be very close to what the Senate did and a little bit deeper than what the governor did. But we had something that was considerably deeper, and we were doing considerably more dramatic cuts that probably would have extended over many agencies, and we were told we didn't have to do that much.
And if so I might, can you then tell me the number that the Senate has so I know what we're similar
12.
To?
12.1 is the Senate. And that's on the website, too.
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, I'm looking at the Senate spreadsheet. I have a net general fund change of $32.4 million for fiscal year 10 and 11. That's different from the governor by $8 million. But I should note two things. When you're comparing between the House and Senate State Government Finance Division, we don't have all of the same accounts. We have the Department of Military Affairs, which is a significant account of over $40 million, and then they have some small boards and councils that we don't have. And also, the Senate did not include a large across-the-board cut in their state government finance bill.
All right. Thank you.
And remember, with that number, what is $20 million of it is tax compliance. $10 million of it gets taken care of in tax compliance.
Ms. Roberts, could you repeat that last point before the questioning about the different treatment, the constitutional officers, offices versus, I didn't quite catch that.
The governor has, and you'll see it at the end of this spreadsheet, an additional $9 million that is calculated, it would be spread across state agencies as a result of certain enterprise savings. That was a discussion we had in this committee a week or so ago, and so that would raise agency operating budget reductions to 3% and 6%, but the last three is not in a direct cut to each agency. It's in this larger pool, and since the legislature and the constitutional offices would not be subject to that same across-the-board cut,
okay,
their cut was calculated to try and be the equivalent of that 3% and 6%, but done as a direct cut. Moving on to the Secretary of State, the recommended reduction is $354,000 in 10-11 and $500,000 in 12-13. For the State Auditor, the recommended reduction is $110,000, $156,000 in 12 and 13. And I should note that this recommended reduction was only applied to the non-reimbursable portion of the office. The majority of the office, which is funded through the general fund but then collects fees to recover its costs, that was not cut through this recommendation. Moving on to the state agencies, you'll see the first one, the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. Here you'll see the 3% and 3% for a total of $36,000 for 10 and 11. For the State Board of Investment, the 3% and 3% for 10 and 11 is a total of $7,000, and again, should note that this only applies to the general fund portion of the SBI, which is the portion of their budget they use to actually invest the general fund. The majority of their budget is charged directly to the other funds that they invest oversee. Moving on to administrative hearings, you'll see there's a 3% and 3% operating budget cut. But you'll also see an increased recommended appropriation, and this is for transfer of the implied consent jurisdiction. There's an offsetting reduction that's being carried right now in the public safety line, and I believe it is Article 3 of the bill that we have in front of us, the governor's bill, and I think that's a jurisdictional issue. If that is going to happen, we have to sort of make sure both pieces move together.
And I thought, since the more complicated part of that, and where, at least as far as my personal opinions are, people know much more about it, ought to be in Michael Paymar's committee. We ought to not, you know, because they've had the real subject matter of that But my opinion seemed to be that it seemed like a good thing to go into the Office of Administrative Appeals for some serious savings.
Moving on to the Office of Enterprise Technology on line 46, the 3% reduction for 10 and 11 is $280,000. And then again, you'll see in the tails, the governor's included ratification of his unallotment at additional $260,000 in 12 and 13. For Department of Administration, the recommended changes are again the operating budget reduction of $327,000. The governor has also recommended a reduction to the self-advocacy network grant, which was funded in the state government bill last year. So that's an $8,000 reduction beginning in fiscal year 11. And finally, you'll see the unallotment in the tails, the ratification. The cap board, the 3% is equivalent of $17,000 for 10 and 11. And for moving on to management and budget, the total operating budget reduction would be $985,000. And then carried forward into the tails, that's $1.2 million plus an additional recommended $918,000 from the unallotment. Moving down to Department of Revenue, the 3% you see listed here of $2 million in 10 and 11 is only applied to the compliance support portion of the department. As you'll recall, they testified that's about a third of the department's budget at this point. The direct compliance piece was not part of this recommended cut. And then on the next line, 67, you'll see the $6.7 million that's needed as the additional resources to the department to fund the additional tax compliance that we discussed at our last meeting. The tax prepare e-file requirements of $78,000, this is an administrative savings that the department calculates from moving the requirement for tax preparers that if they prepare, let me see if I can remember how many it was, under a certain number of, if they prepare more than 10 income tax returns, they would be required to file electronically. And so the department is calculating some administrative savings from that. And then finally, you'll see the unallotment ratification. On line 73, there's a cancellation of $750,000 that was provided in this bill last year as a contingency in case matching funds were needed for the federal stimulus dollars. And at this point, it's felt those are not needed, so they're canceled in his recommendation. And then finally, on line 76, you'll see that additional 3% that I was talking about, the $9 million beginning in 10 and 11, that would be allocated across all agencies. On the second page, so just at the very top, you see the total governor's changes for 10 and 11. Net expenditure reductions, $12,976,000 for 2012, $20,626,000. The final section of the spreadsheet is the recommended changes that are revenue changes under administration. There's $209,000 from the contributed capital to the Central Stores Internal Service Fund, which is now closed. That was startup money that was provided to the fund whenever it was started. I'm not sure of the date, but several years ago. There will be a small remaining balance just until they close out the fund, and they've made sure that all expenses are covered. But this would transfer back to the general fund. The special revenue fund is made up of several small items that we heard from the EBOs. It includes the archaeologist's burial account, the publications account, and some other very small $3,000 items, which I can't recall what they all are right now. Under the Gambling Control Board, the transfer, the $139,000 is a transfer from the Gambling Control Board's operating account. They are now funded through the Special Revenue Fund, and that would take advantage of some reduced expenditures in that fund and then transfer it to the general fund. The problem gambling grant reduction is a reduction to the grant that was made in the state government bill last year, and part of it was contingent on a non-state match, and this would cancel that part of the grant. Under the governor's office, there's a transfer of special revenue of $42,000. This represents a portion of the amount that's transferred from state agencies to the governor's office to a special revenue account to pay for the government the government, I can't think of their title, but the like the legislative liaisons or government staff in the governor's office. On line 93, you'll see a line that says new game revenue and zero, and I left that on there because in the governor's recommendations, there was originally a holding number of $5 million for new games. That's actually been a forecast item, and the projections for any new lottery revenue have now been included in the lottery's new forecast, and so we don't show that as a budget change item. Under Minnesota Management and Budget, the $20,000 is a transfer from some internal revenue funds that are used by the department for their own internal IT purposes. Under the Racing Commission, again, you'll see this is similar to the Gambling Control Board, a transfer from their special revenue fund operating budget to the general fund. And finally, on line 99, the additional tax compliance, that's the revenue piece of the compliance initiative. So the total revenue changes are $27 million. That's new revenue to the general fund, and $53.7 million in 12-13. And the net change, expenditure reductions, and new revenue added together is $40.3 million in 10-11 and $74.35 in 12-13.
Okay. Any questions or comments? My plan is now to go through several amendments that have been suggested. I know there's some that we probably don't have here. So it's the concept is to build a delete all bill. I'm hoping that we can just get a sense of what we're doing with them, so I'm not going to vote on each one. But if someone has an objection, I really wish they'd raise it now so that we're kind of prepared to think about it or think about alternatives. Some of them, as I said, with our shifting target, some of them we counted on raising a fair amount of revenue, but now we can put them in and count on less revenue or no revenue, just good government. Take the revenue as a surprise boost to the forecast next time if we do get the revenue. But we don't have to, you know, if you read the language in the governor's bill, one of the things that happened was that, like with the $9 million, he says he's going to get $9 million in efficiencies doing this, but then the backup to that is that he gets to go back in and cut all the agencies that $9 million if they don't deliver, if you're not delivered with the same kind of efficiency, with that level of efficiency. So whatever that number, we probably still have to have that, some language like that, but the number's going to be much smaller than what we were going to start with, depending on what we do. So I don't know, you know, if anyone has any in terms of the items. As I said, our plan was pretty much to go with the governor's spreadsheet again, unless there are changes and people have other suggestions. Representative Patrick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think our side has probably about 5 or 6 amendments we'd like to talk about that we couldn't get them to you earlier because we just
that's
had a chance
right.
to meet.
Them?
No, we don't have them ready yet. We have kind of a concept.
That's okay.
Perhaps
that's
I could.
Plan.
That might be a little too loose, huh?
we'll do that.
Some of them we have.
Well, if you have.
So I'm not sure how you want to.
I mean, I'm not sure that our amendments may be written out as in more amendments. Form, but I'm not sure they're really, they were just concepts that we got to give to Mark a day ago. So he made them into,
an hour ago?
Into real language.
So we beat her? So I guess I don't know if you want to talk about them here, later, or if you want to go through these other ones.
Well, the ones that are in the folder.
Okay.
And then we'll do those. Yeah, I would like to talk about everything that anyone wants in the bill. I would prefer to not have surprises Thursday. Well, you know, votes may end up being surprises, but I'd like subjects to not be surprises. And so we'll go. So let's look direction. Okay, just the way we go. First one is 148, MS 148. And that's the default on two-sided printing. People can see that.
That's the.
Is that yours?
Yeah.
I thought mine. I don't remember who it was. It was mine.
Okay, so this is just again, it doesn't mean you have to do two-sided printing, it's just the default setting. So if you don't decide, you have to make an affirmative decision to do printing on one side. Plus, everything we're giving you is printed on one side. But that's not true. Oh. Only when they're one. Okay. Okay, the next one. That's MS. Okay. This MS 147, this came from the. Yes?
Can I ask? Representative Mason? Madam Chair. So are we going to vote on these, or these
no,
are going
to
be
no,
included?
The concept is, if there are people who have objections to them, I would like to have them raised now. But we thought it was just, we thought it would be so much easier to deal with the delete everything amendment and have them in real amendment form. I mean, it isn't anything sneaky about this, it's just that we didn't have time to get them into what looked like a real bill. So I would be happy if people have objections to something that they raise them. No, I don't know that we need, if you really want to vote, you can even do a vote. But, you know, I think everything will be accessible to being voted on Thursday.
Madam Chair, at the risk of offending the chair, I just had observation. I feel like I'm in the Senate where we're previewing everything and going to talk about everything, and then we'll get to vote on them and actually act on them a day or two later. But I think this is a good process.
I didn't consider it a Senate process. I considered a rational way to do it with the constraints who are operating under.
We'll make sure that the Senate never hears that you called them rational.
I didn't admit it was a Senate process. That was the first the first. Okay, so MS 147. This came from the auditor's office, and this really just continues with looking at portfolio and performance information, and this extends it for another 4 years. And in the Pension Commission, I think we actually have language requiring the auditor to convene an investment policy subcommittee and to look deeply into the investment policies. So I think, I don't know. You know, again, if there's anyone from the auditor's office that wants to stick to it, but again, it seems like it's been working well, and it seems like it's a good idea. Okay, these are things that I think we've had before. House file A1 amendment, that revenues received by the House of Representatives from voluntary donation are appropriated to the House.
Can I return to 147?
Okay.
I'm just trying to understand the effect of the date change, and wondering what are we actually changing? Are we changing the report that they don't have to report for another 3 years? Are we changing that the report is electronic? Are we actually extending the sunset date? It's unclear to me what's actually happening with this 3-year extension.
So someone from the order is off. We believe it's the extension of the sunset date. Now, I must admit it reads it kind of funny, but
I wonder if Mr. Shepard might, I mean, my reading of it is that they don't have to report to us for another 3 years. When now, if that's a cost, if it's cost prohibitive for them to report, and that's an issue, and we could, and we're helping them save some money and can find a way to make this work, I'm open to that. But I don't read it as a sunset. I read that they don't have to talk to us for another 3 years, which makes me wonder if we have confidence that shouldn't we ask them. But regardless of how we feel about it, if it's an important policy change that we've asked them to do, shouldn't they tell us a little bit more about what they're doing? I don't know if Mr. Shepard has any thoughts.
Madam Chair and members, I agree with Representative Kalin's reading of it. And I was not involved in any conversations with the auditor, so I don't know what they intended. But I think as written, it postpones for 4 years the duty to report to the state auditor on the portfolio and performance information, investment information.
To report electronically. Well, okay. Okay, we'll have them come in.
That'd be great.
Tell us later.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, this is something that came from Barry LeGrave, and I don't know if they've received them. We've carried this before.
Madam Chair, is this the A1 amendment?
Yes.
Yes. Are we like, I mean, when I read this, I think, like, are we going to, like, put, like, coin boxes on the TVs in the hallway in the Capitol and make the lobbyists put in quarters to watch? Or, I mean, what are we talking about here?
That's not.
I don't even know what this means.
We have credit cards, actually,
you
charge more.
Yeah. Apparently, there have been some voluntary donations to cause to keep the service, like, for the broadcast or for print media, and so this made sure that they didn't just go to the general fund, that they came back to the house. Again, get some more
information. Well, and to the subject, Madam Chair, I wonder if, and I'm sorry I wasn't in Chair Borowski's committee this morning for Representative Saylor's provision requiring a survey of all free publications that to get them electronically or not. I know that, for instance, like the DNR Volunteer magazine, there's a pretty active solicitation in there, and I don't believe that our free materials from the House or Senate make that kind of active solicitation. I think it's one of the things that we may want to think about, that most folks who read our free publications, especially Session Weekly, are pretty engaged and may see value in making a voluntary donation. I think we may actually want to require them as part of this, that they include that solicitation as part of their...
Put that on the list to follow up on.
I see Ms. Roberts writing it down. I don't see Mr. Shepherd in the room, but we'll... I don't know how much we could book out of that, but we can reasonably expect a dollar or two.
Okay.
Well, and Madam Chair, I mean, maybe we just do some budget reductions. I get a Session Weekly mailed to my house every single week. I've never signed up for it.
Oh,
I don't want it.
I don't get it.
I don't need it.
You signed up. You must have signed up.
Yeah. Again, Mr. Holberg raises his head in committee.
There should be an affirmative every year opt-in, or, I mean...
There is.
Well...
Yeah, Mr. Holberg, we have a...
But, I mean, I guess it seems like we're kind of frittering around the edges here. I don't know if we're going to look at consolidation of House and Senate or any, like, real reforms, or is this...
We're building up.
That's the next meeting? Oh, next amendment, okay.
This is the executive. Yeah, okay. The next amendment, which is doesn't have a number on it, and this is the place where don't pay attention to the numbers, because the numbers are going to dramatically be reduced, and it may end up being written with just the total and listing these issues. So these are the additional. This is the fleshing out of what the governor had in his $9 million cut, where he wanted to look at where he kind of said information stuff and other stuff. And so we broke it down into some specific amounts that we would needed to meet our targets. What, since our target is now less, what we may very well be doing is we may just lump these in together with one figure and just lump these as suggested for changes without specific amounts tied to them. So the things that we're looking for was the reduction. And part of the problem is that some of these things we think are being done in other divisions. And so even though we're generally doing it through, the governor did it in his budget in finance, and we're generally doing it in that, I think it's better if finance keeps track of it rather than initiates it, particularly if they're already done. We don't want to double count them if they're being done in other divisions. So one is out-of-state travel. Two is the reduction of expenditures for energy in state buildings. And one of the things is a lot of localities have done this now to ensure that cleaning services in these buildings are performed during daytime hours to the extent feasible. Inasmuch as this is something that very well might be subject to negotiations, this is the kind of thing which may be put off into dealing with tails instead of dealing with the immediate budget in this biennium. Okay, the other one is the question of looking at the consolidation of information technology. The figure that always stands out is that we have these 36 data centers, and the ultimate goal is to reduce them to one data center. But it's unfortunately, in order to do that, you have to spend money for the most part. At some point, we'd like to get control of the budgeting and have the suggestion that came from current people in OET was that we actually should have a separate technology committee in the legislature, to which my answer is this committee is as close as you can get. Ignore the numbers, but we're going to work on information technology due to consolidation of functions within the executive branch, contracts of professional and technical services, other enterprise-wise functions, telecommunications, and consolidation of space usage within state buildings. So example, if we move more towards telecommuting, which I think revenue, DOT has had a big contract to do a chunk of that. Revenue has done a lot of that. You know, eventually you're looking at needing less rent, you know, more efficiently spared space. And then I'm not going to read B is too long to read. But this then says when you're doing reduction, well, things like information system, when you're doing reduction in those kinds of things, you proportionally make them to the dedicated funds or federal funds as they're allowed to be done. And then that money is transferred. I think you can read it. But how long is that line of it we've had before, Mark? Yeah, as long as it really is.
Madam Chair, this is very similar to language that we've had before. The provision dealing with the dedicated funds, I don't know if that's been in every across-the-board cut that we've had. Sometimes we've only limited those to the general fund savings, but the structure of this is similar to other across-the-board cuts that we've done in previous state government bills.
Okay, now I have at least two bills here which people are interested in having incorporated. Mine actually, the House File 2557, is actually here. Honestly, it's actually passed through the Government Operations Committee and went to the Finance Committee and was sent to us.
Just can't get rid of that.
I don't think we can move things that way.
And this is again, an easier part, I think. Particularly because the Senate has shown that they can understand it and pass it into the GovOp committee. This is looking at the position of a state webmaster, regulate
So requiring the state chief information officer to develop standards to enhance public access to state electronic records. And so that is, and so essentially the language from this, it's expected that the language of this will be pretty well put in the bill.
Well, I don't want to register necessarily, hear any opposition to the concept of a state webmaster. I think my concern more had to do with dictating to the CIO, to do these sorts of things. And question that I had, and I was seeing if there's anybody here from OET, whether they do anything like this now, or, because sometimes they have someone to that. I don't know if they maybe necessarily don't have the authority. Not quite sure. I didn't know if maybe someone was here to speak to that. Looks like maybe there is.
Madam Chair, members, Representative Kiffmeyer,
the Office of
I'm sorry, for the record, my name is Michael Meilenberg. I'm representing the Office of Enterprise Technology. The Office of Enterprise Technology currently manages the North Star Portal. The North Star Portal, if you're familiar with it, is sort of a gateway into the state's websites, but it is not comprehensive. It does not include all of the agency websites. There are 3,700 government agency websites, and many of them, most of them, are maintained by each individual agency. This legislation would require OET to develop, or not develop, but to coordinate all agency websites so that they have a similar look and feel, so that issues regarding accessibility, there was language passed last year that addressed accessibility for people with visual and hearing impairments, so that those issues are coordinated and dealt with on a enterprise basis. The legislation would also require that OET develop standards for data transparency. Data transparency is a rather new a phenomenon in government. The federal government has been very innovative in data transparency. It's about making data available to citizens in its rawest form. Frequently, what they term it now is in terms of data mashups. They'll take data, for instance, data on the number of crimes in an area and on the number of tornadoes in an area, and then citizens will take the data and mash it up. They'll take them and put them together to show, for example, that when there are tornadoes, crimes can increase. So it's about making data available. And OET supports these efforts and has worked on them to a certain extent, but this would really amplify the efforts. We are on the record saying we do support the effort and the goals of this, but we have testified that we would need additional resources for this. And I believe our fiscal note has been submitted today or yesterday.
Madam Chair, I guess I would like to see the fiscal note because, that's something that's important. Is that available here?
We can see if it can be pulled off now. We can do it at the end of the meeting or we can do it early. I think one of the things is we're probably not going to do an appropriation to do this, but we're going to incorporate it into the savings sector somehow, that the savings will also be used to do this process. Okay, then we had House File 3301 from Representative Pepin. And this was something that I know Representative Pepin has talked about. One of the problems is, and we've gone back and forth with the compliance people about whether they're doing something like this or whether they need to do it or so. one of the thoughts was this, the tax system is being totally reworked due to appropriations that we put in last year. We heard Commissioner Inez tell us about the the levels at which they were putting them in, and by next December the personal income tax level will be put in, and we think that that might be a better time to look at doing this rather than now. And do you have an amendment that Representative Pepin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, that's what we worked with Mr. Shepherd on today. That's one of the amendments, the A3 amendment we're passing on, which is the way I understand it. Maybe I'm wrong, Mr. Shepherd, but I think that the only thing we really changed is we moved it back, understanding that they need time to move forward with their tax integration system and clean up their data. So it's basically the same type of concept, except for moving it back to July 1st, 2011.
We just wanted to be ready then.
Well, I believe what they said was that they needed till at least December to clean up data, et cetera, et cetera. So the idea would be to not have them do it before then, but to, you know, once ready, look into putting an RFP out for tax analytics.
Then they would start. I wonder if that's enough. Did you talk to someone about whether the January 1st deadline was enough? I thought we were moving.
I think it's July 1st.
I thought we were moving. What?
It's July 1st. And no, that we just picked that about an hour ago. So
okay.
didn't have time to confirm the date.
Okay.
Yeah, it's so it would be, and that would be obviously something that we can work with MMB on to see if that there'd be a better time. But the idea would be to have them put out an RFP at some point when they're ready to bring in business intelligence tools, right. Bring in tax analytics.
Is there anyone from the Department of Revenue who would like to speak to this?
For the record, my name is Greg Cheatham with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. As we've stated before, the Department of Revenue is very interested in getting into more and more data mining and higher-end analytics. And the other day I did testify about some of the work that we had been doing with the University of Minnesota, and Representative Pepin's exactly right, the fact that right now we are in the middle of our integrated tax system, and that really needs to be our focus. This is the first I've heard of, you know, moving it out to July of 2011. I'm trying to quickly think, you know, is that going to give us enough time or not? I mean, truthfully, we were always thinking that we wanted to get through December 15th of this year is rollout 3, and that is the individual income tax. We do have a rollout 4, which is 1 year later, which includes a number of other taxes, you know, liquor, tobacco, and a number of others. And then we actually have what we call a maintenance period, which basically goes for another year after that. And our focus has really been on integrated tax there. So I do believe that, it is something we want to look into, but I hesitate to say that July of 2011 gives us enough time to really get everything in place and the rest. Unfortunately, there is a lag between when the data is modeled and put into the new integrated tax system and when it's really available to be useful in a data warehousing, data mining type of situation. I know on the last one we did withholding and corporate income tax, and the data really wasn't finalized until November of 2009, and we came live December 15th of 2009. So the intent, I understand, is really good. It's just the timing is still, I would like to maybe think a little bit about that. It does seem very aggressive.
Okay, well, you do have the language, and we're not doing anything officially really until Thursday. And we'd be, you know, if there are changes that you want in the language to put a little more flexibility in it, we'd certainly be willing to do that. And I think we're clearly willing to do the dates as you, is that, I don't want to speak to you, Representative Pepin, but
yes.
You think,
So if you would come back to us with this, we would be, but stay here. I think there are more questions. Representative Kithlon.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman. I remember, though, at the last committee hearing when you did testify, though, that Representative Downey made a comment, though, that sometimes when you're dealing with some of these analytics and you're dealing with data, there can be a value here in looking at them at the same time to make sure that your data structure and your software matches up with the requirements of the analytics, and so that your fields match, and that so that you don't come later and you do analytics and say, wish we had thought of this, you know, when we were building this software package. So could you comment in regards to that topic?
To a certain extent, I understand where Representative Downey was going. There is a big difference between the way that you structure data for a data warehouse and the use of data mining and a transactional system like the integrated tax system. Right now, the focus is really on how to put the data. I mean, an income tax form is an income tax form, and you're going to have to get the data out of that. And what you want to do when you're doing a transactional form is, what's the best way to put that together for speed of processing and the rest? Mm-hmm. Then once that is known, we come in and take a look at it and say, from a data mining and analytics perspective, how do we want to do that? But it actually follows that. And I think when Representative Downey had suggested perhaps a few members of this committee come over, Representative Pepin and himself, and talk to us, I think that would be a really good idea. As I said before, you know, it is something that we want to do. It's something that we were doing with the University of Minnesota, and we were having some pretty good success with it. It's just that we wanted to make sure that we get the integrated tax system in on time, on budget, and hit our dates. And, you know, so I would love to have those discussions and really come up with what's the best way to go forward with this. And I would like to go back and talk to my commissioner and make sure that he's happy with it, too.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, sure. I guess a question to Representative Pepin. How much should the RFP be for? Do you have a dollar amount in mind? Or, I mean, they could do an RFP and say they'll pay $10, and they're probably not going to get a lot of good responses.
Yeah, no, I don't have a dollar amount in here yet. I mean, obviously, this we need to talk about that a little bit. I guess my thought is that a lot of things will be changing at Department of Revenue and other places in the next year or so that will...
nothing at all.
What was that?
Maybe nothing at all will change.
Well, I think no matter what happens, there'll be major changes. And so I think my motivation is to want to start getting this into place and not get lost along the way between administrations.
And the best way to do that is, you know, I would like to work with you also to make that happen. And as I said, you know, there's lots of different options out there that we could pursue. You know, some states have had very good success with, you know, this benefits funded pieces. We actually were having some success working with the U, which was pretty low cost and a lot of collaboration. There are positives and negatives to that, too, so I want to talk about that. But the best way to do that, I think, is where we really need to talk about so how we can hit what the legislature really wants to accomplish and do something that's sustainable over a long term.
So I think using this language as a guide, if you could come back with something that you think might work a little bit better for you, we would appreciate that.
Okay.
Any other
questions
or comments? Okay. No, this is the Commission on Service Innovation. Oh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's actually Representative Downey's,
yes.
And he actually probably hasn't even seen this language yet. We met with, when we met earlier, our GOP caucus met with Mr. Shepard, and we talked about the idea of shortening up his Commission on Service Innovation a little bit, and so this is the result of what Mr. Shepard put together, and I just wanted to pass it out so that we had a you know, kind of a concept. I think that Keith is coming back, and he can talk a little bit more about it. You probably know a little bit about it. I know you, Senator Bonoff is carrying this in the Senate. So
The only thing I'm a little concerned, and I'll let you do it, is that I know that Representative Glaske has, this is kind of like
think it's the language of the bill itself, including all of the commission members and so forth. And I know that Representative Pulaski has denied a request to hear the bill in government operations. And I don't mind putting in concepts that are in that category, but, you know,
I think Representative Downey is willing, you know, wants to, you know, he's willing to do that. And maybe you have a concept of what he said to Mr. Shepherd, but, you know, I think he understands that the whole thing in. That's why I said I know he hasn't even looked at this yet, but he would like to talk to you more on that.
Okay, well, we have the vice chair of that committee here, so she can give her impressions about what.
I would say that Representative Pulaski would, as you stated, Madam Chair, I think he's probably interested in participating and seeing this. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, he doesn't want to hear it this year, but if we want to edge this concept forward, I think you need to have something less than the full bill in it. So.
Well, and Madam Chair, I do think our rules allow fiscal bills to carry these sorts of things. So if it's a rule issue, I know our rules allow it, but okay.
It's not a rule issue. It's just a question of, you know, I think Representative Downey, if he wants to put this, if he want to put something that's a little bit gentler than the full language of the bill. For example, I really don't want to list the membership and so forth. You know, I think Representative Downey needs to talk to Representative Pulaski about what, you know, we don't necessarily have to do what he tells us, but this one I thought is a little extreme to put into a little.
I think he's open to that.
So, you know, Representative Bailey?
I was going to call you Madam Speaker. I've been doing that all day today. Yes. I don't know. Madam Chair, I have a question generally about the bill, and so whenever it's deemed appropriate for me to ask a question, I apologize for not being here. I had another committee that went over, and so.
Yeah, it's appropriate.
Okay. I see our good friend and yours, Judge Lippman, is in the audience, and I'm assuming you went over the office of, or the judicial hearings, the Office of Administrative Hearings.
We briefly talked about it, and one of the things we said about it was that this is a proposal which cuts across two jurisdictions, ours and Representative Tamar's.
Yep.
And I had some brief discussion with Representative Tamar that I much preferred. We'd do anything we wanted with the financing. Mm-hmm. I guess the judges have already been cut that amount, but I preferred him to carry the language because I thought his committee would have better understanding. So. Yes.
Okay, so what you're saying is Chair Paymar's bill will have the actual language and you're carrying the money? Or did I misunderstand what you just said?
No, I guess he's carrying a lack of money to the judges and they're doing less of a cut, I guess, to the Office of Administrative
Hearings. Okay. The question I have is, has any policy, and maybe this is where... one of the testifiers can come down, if it went to a policy committee to have this discussion about this change.
All I know is that I didn't want it to.
Yes. Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Raymond Krauss, Chief Administrative Law Judge for the Office of Administrative Hearings. We have scheduled tomorrow at 6:30 in Representative Hillstrom's committee a policy discussion of this provision.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. The only reason why I asked is because this summer I was the chair of the DWI working group, and as they will say, there was quite the conversation about the constitutionality of any challenges that would occur during this type of hearings on a stop for implied consent. So I just wanted to make sure that somewhere along the way there was either there was a policy discussion among this. I don't object to the change. I just wanted to make sure that we had a policy stop in here. Just trying to keep it clear and transparent, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Anything you want to add?
It's a great idea. We look forward to chatting with members of the Public Safety Policy Committee tomorrow night.
Okay. Thank you. one of the other issues that we don't quite have language for. I'm sorry, I gave all my copies out to the Capital Investment Committee, so I can just hold it up and then pass it around. This is this concept of the transparency of looking where certain kinds of targeted investments go was done, and we did have it here, it was done with the ARRA funding under the direction of the federal government. I think a lot of us, weren't you on that subcommittee too? And they came up with what I think is a spectacular map in terms of looking at it. I think we were the ones who actually suggested that they go to MNGO and have MNGO help them, which is the what used to be LIMIC, the geological information systems people, the mapping people. And so they ended up, so if you want it, this is one that was just developed for Maryland, and it puts their capital investment bill on a map like our ARRA bill. And again, apologizing for not having the copies, but I can pass it around. And I thought, when we saw it, I immediately asked in the ARRA committee, I said, can't we do the whole budget on this? And people just turned paler than usual. And so then the answer was that it made sense to start having done the AR, and it was going to be very easy to do both the capital investment bill, the LCCMR bill, and eventually the new legacy, the next legacy bill on it. And the thought of how you would fund this, and so we're going to have some language that we're working on with Mark Shepherd, is that we say that we're going to do it in this bill, but we fund it from sort of a tip credit on the other, on those other appropriations. And it's a very, very small amount, you know, when you look at the size. Like for the capital investment bill, it would be $100,000 out of $685 million or something like that. And so I've discussed it with all the chairs of those committees that do this, that bill, and they're all, that's why it came late. I was presenting it to the Capital Investment Committee, and they were all very agreeable to do that. So we'll do the language in this bill, and the money will just be there by implication. So, Representative Kalin?
Madam Chair, this is actually something that I've talked over a couple of years with IT folks in Silicon Valley and in the voting rights community as well, that I think we will probably want to include information or language that suggests or even requires the solicitation of nonprofit foundation support dollars first, because I think this could be something that the Sunshine Foundation and others would really want to use. I think if we do it right, I think the resources are there, the interest is there, and then private sector, and we may want to leverage those resources first. Yeah. And invite them to participate in helping make it happen.
As we understood from talking to Mr. Arbeit, that having developed it now through the ARRA stimulus funds, the transition for these other bills is really minimal. It is the but the idea, if you want to do something like extend it to the whole budget, it's probably good to put that kind of language in.
And I think, Madam Chair, that foundations would be interested in supporting that work, and I know that individuals in the IT community may want to. I mean, this is along the lines of what we heard at the Humphrey from Larry. I can't remember his last name, but not Larry Jacobs, the other the innovation firm. But I think that sort of open competition to help us solve these problems and let the public solve the problem and meet this need for the whole state budget, and we can just sort of let the foundation dollars flow through.
Actually, the best technology to do this is in state government, and they are funded by through the MNGO. In terms of for example, their work on ARRA was considered to be one of the four best in the country in terms of doing it. I don't know if it was the fourth best or one of the four or something.
And Madam Chair, I'm familiar with it, having carried a stimulus bill and seeing some of the results, but I think there's some. I think we should just be open to another solution coming as well that builds off of it.
Right.
And I don't know that we want it. If the private sector can do it, we should make sure that they're doing it rather than us.
Okay. Mr. Hubinger, do you want to, you here? Okay. Has LCC been doing something like this or what? someone put your name into it. So.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. I'm Greg Hubinger with the legislative coordinating group. Our office was given the task in the legacy bill last year to develop a website to show how the citizens' funds are being spent through the four legacy amendment funds and then the LCCMR account. Since that point, we have been spending a lot of time with the agencies that are receive those appropriations, figuring out how to display that data, how to show it, and trying to come up with a cohesive website. There is a draft of a site that's live now. It has just basic information about the funds. We're working on the mechanisms so that agencies can enter the data for their projects themselves, because there will be hundreds and hundreds of projects through these funds over the years. And we're testing some data now and hope to have that up in the next couple of weeks. Our staff did talk with Mr. Arbeit about their website, and we were going in somewhat different directions. We're using different software, software that we concluded would make it easier for agencies to enter this data directly. We're not sure. We haven't talked with them about the feasibility of having one site display all of this data.
I actually thought you would have more of coordination with the NGO folks. Did you do any following of the ARRA site?
I'm sorry?
Did you follow the work that was done with the ARRA site?
Madam Chair, we and our staff have, and the others that are working on the website with us from the agencies, have looked at that site, and we agree that it's a great site. The agencies that we've been working with are very interested in providing broader information in terms of data on projects. The ARRA site seems to be map-driven. Ours will probably be more project-driven, where you could pull up tables of all projects in a county, for example, or all projects in a watershed, and have that show. And then if you want to see it on a map, display it that way as well. So we're sort of going off in different directions.
Okay, well, at some point we'll look at bringing those directions together somehow. So, any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you. Is it anyone else has any other or ideas that they want to discuss?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to give you a very brief description of some of the amendments that we'll likely be bringing here on Thursday. Representative Downey's been working on fleet consolidation. He's been working with, I believe, Mr. Rhodes in administration, and thinks that there might be some small amount of money there. So he's working on that. Not sure where he's at, but that's one. Another one we'd like to talk about is a bill that was actually offered by Jennifer Lewin, and I think Representative Kiffmeyer will be talking about it, on zero-based budgeting. She wanted to talk about that. We're also going to bring something forward. I believe this was a bill. I'm not sure who had it. I think it was 2299 on outsourcing, so probably something on putting an RFP out for some type of outsourcing. I think Representative Sanders will be talking about that. Federal insolvency. This is Representative Downey's. My understanding is if it has to do if we lose federal money, planning process. I know very little about that one, so we'll have to wait for that.
it's apparently
doomsday planning.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't actually read this bill, so that's the max that I know. And then, Madam Chair, I'd also...
In some of these cases, when we have individual bills, like, for example, the webmaster bill, which is moving through the process and moving through the Senate, too, we're probably going to do two things with them. We're going to send them out individually and, you know, along with their... and also put them in this bill. So we might do something with that. You know, we usually do that depending on what the office wants.
And then one other. Madam Chair, I know that this is your favorite, my Sunset Commission bill. I'd like to talk about that either on Thursday or in a separate committee hearing, if you'd rather.
Either way.
Okay, how about Thursday? And that's all I know of right now.
Okay. Anything else that we need to do? The plan is that we'll have the delete all amendment available tomorrow in the afternoon, and then we'll seriously work on numbers and things like that. And Sarah, you just had a little wrench thrown into our plans for other people to be able to do a little bit more work today. But everything is moving so forward in all directions that. Can't really object. Representative
Tuffin. Madam Chair, if you'd like to have these six or seven proposals we have, if you'd like to put those in the delete everything amendment, we'd be happy to supply those to you tomorrow.
I can't quite. I know. With all the ideas of cooperation, I can't quite bring myself to do things that I've proposed over all the years, like zero-based budgeting and a delete-all amendment. I'm perfectly willing to discuss them.
And
Representative Hulbert?
Madam Chair, given that it is deadline week and many of us have a bunch of bills and a bunch of committees, could you send out the delete-all amendment electronically to committee members so that maybe at midnight tomorrow night when we get done with everything else we're working on, we can at least take a peek at it before sure. committee. Thank you.
No problem. Oh, one other thing that we actually thought we were going to work out but ended up not because we've been doing too many things. You know, there's certain things that always go into the framework of the bill. It's been in this bill when Rukavina chaired it, when Krinke chaired it, and that was the getting rid of the Senate parking meters. They wouldn't know it was our bill if that wasn't in it. But we're going to have, we're going to have a new twist on it this year, which is collecting the money that comes from having them open to the public at the parking meters. And so during session. And so that would, we actually had some numbers that had it be a fairly significant amount.
If we put the spaces out for bid, we could probably attract some decent
money. Well, we probably
could have lobbyists, pay and lobbyists. They would love it.
Well, we think we're just going to put, using downtown Minneapolis as a model, we're just going to put a pretty high rate on them. Okay.
Madam Chair, I'm a little bit disappointed that we haven't seen from you this year the recommendation to sell ad space. Mm-hmm. On construction sites or the naming of state buildings. But
you have an opportunity for amendments on Thursday.
Anyone misses those coming in at this point, anyone misses that, we're perfectly amenable to advertisements to do it. Apparently, one of the initial plans was to designate the governor's mansion as a conference center. And to put that out for bid for conferences, and then of which the governor, if he wanted to have it at specific times, could bid on, whoever the governor may be, could bid on having it on specific dates too. But apparently, people thought that was not a good idea for this session at this time. Fight back. But that's available if anyone wants to.
Madam Chair, I know you and I had actually discussed. Furloughing the governor's mansion or mothballing it for a little bit, and I had gotten a suggestion from you or someone else to do the conference center approach. So am I hearing from you that I will need to draft that up as an amendment, or will it be
That would be useful if you could.
Okay. I'll work with staff, but I think that it's just one of the things that we should all think about. If there are other areas, other buildings that of the like that either we're not maximizing our revenue or we really can't afford them for a temporary purpose, that we could mothball them while keeping the staff to keep them up and do regular maintenance, but yeah. Not much more than that.
Deciding to go to an important source, I asked the spouse of one of the prospective governors if that particular spouse was interested, would be devastated if we didn't let that family live in the governor's mansion. And that spouse said that they were perfectly happy living where they were. So, but that's only one of nine candidates, so I don't know what the others want to do.
I suspect they lived in the metro. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Oh, minutes. Representative Kalin moves the minutes of March 4th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. The meeting is adjourned.